Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of NBC's Pro Basketball Talk, with you as always. And today, hey, we're taking your questions. We're talking about just some of the topics and things going on around the league with Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. First, just a reminder, can you go into applepodcast.com/PBT or Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your apps? We would love to be, or your podcast. We'd love for you to rate us. Just give us a comment, give us a rating, let us know what you're thinking. It helps us and helps the podcast. And of course, if you've got questions, you can send questions anytime to us at pbtpodcast@gmail.com. That's pbtpodcast@gmail.com. And without further ado, let's get into it. And we bring in the man, the myth, the legend to do that, Dan Feldman. How's it going, Dan?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. There's a lot to get to, a lot of reader questions around the league, but nothing has sparked more conversation in Twitter, and I got a couple questions about this. You wrote the story yesterday where LeBron James came out and said, no team leans on their young players more than the Lakers. And he was referring to the fact that Lonzo Ball's out injured, Kuzma's out injured, Ingram's out injured last night, and it showed in the loss to Denver. We had the distraction of him passing MJ, but the Lakers continued to just play terribly, and he was talking about the impact of those losses and how much they lean on the young players. And you were first in the story with it, and I laughed when I saw the headline. That's not even accurate.
Not even close. I understand why LeBron thinks this. He hasn't been on teams that have relied on young players so much, and I tried to give him every benefit of the doubt possible. Like, I figure, okay, does he mean first and second year players, which is what he said, or do you mean third year players also? Because he kind of talked a little bit about that. He definitely mentioned Brandon Ingram and Zubats, who was a third year player with the Lakers for a lot of the season, contributing a lot. Did he mean just based on playing time? Was he assigning more to what their role is? I looked at it a few different ways. Did he mean only good teams? Obviously teams like the Hawks, the Bulls, they're relying a lot on young players. Maybe that's not what he meant. Maybe he meant only teams that are, and even good team is a stretch because the Lakers aren't a good team. But let's just say teams trying to be competitive. I went by minutes played. I went by players in their first, second, or third year. This is the most generous to LeBron I could be. And the Lakers were fourth in the league in percentage of minutes given to players in their first three seasons. Number one, though, are the Kings, who are even better than the Lakers. And in an almost tie, just behind the Lakers, are the Nuggets, who are way better than the Lakers.
Yeah, Denver is, I think that's one of the things that's sneakily quiet about them. They have one of the youngest rosters in the league. Now, their core guys, Jokic, look, he's not that young. I mean, he's a veteran. Not been around a long time. He's a young veteran, but he's a veteran still. Jamal Murray, though, is young. They've got a lot of youth around that roster, and they should be only improving and over the next couple of years. Yeah, they've got Will Barton and some other guys there, but they lean pretty heavily on their youth. It's funny, when, by the way, the second I read that headline, the first thought I had was, I could swear I just was at Staples Center two nights ago and watched them lose to a Clipper team that started 3 21-year-olds. under 21, because they've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the rookie, Landry Shamet, the rookie, and then Zubac, who they got through a couple of trades, and he's starting for them now. Now, granted, the Clippers win because they bring their Harrell and Lou Williams off the bench, but they started 3 21-year-olds and they're playoff bound, man.
Yeah. Did you see that Donovan Mitchell liked a tweet? I think it was the one from the Los Angeles Times. Liked a tweet talking about this LeBron quote.
No, I did not.
Yeah, I think just a little pointing out, like, hey, I'm a young player playing a big role on a good team. But that was kind of LeBron's point. The Jazz are not one that fits, because one thing LeBron said was, yeah, there might be some teams that are good that rely on one or two, but not to the extent we are. Well, I think that is kind of the situation Donovan Mitchell's in. The Jazz have a bunch of veterans. Rely on him a lot. Maybe rely on him more than anybody on that team. It is a lot on a young player, but they have surrounded him with veterans. And I think that's different than what LeBron's talking about. But there are still enough teams, like the Clippers with those multiple stars, with the Nuggets throughout their roster, like the Kings really throughout their roster, having young players in prominent roles.
Can I just throw in here, and I don't think they necessarily qualify for what you're saying just because they're not a quote-unquote good team or, you know, not competitive this year. The young roster I probably like the best in the league right now is Atlanta with Trae Young and John Collins.
Why do you like them more than Sacramento?
I think that there's higher ceilings. I am less convinced that, I mean, I like, look, De'Aaron Fox has taken a massive step forward this year. They have found an identity. Bagley has really improved over the course of the season, but I'm not sold on Willie Cauley-Stein. Maybe it's just partially organizational, like I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with anything going on in Sacramento. Not that Atlanta's earned some sort of long-standing trust, but I look at Collins and Trae Young, and I see two guys who, 2 years from now, they could both be all-stars in the East, and I wouldn't be shocked. And you know, they're going to have another high draft pick this year and some other play. I just kind of liked what they're building down there in Atlanta.
I also really think we can't not include the Nuggets.
Yeah.
By average age, they're young. They've been younger than the Hawks this season. You can go player by player and figure out who you want to count, who you don't. But just average age, weighted by playing time, like it is on Basketball Reference, the Nuggets and Kings have both been younger. And the Kings, I'm with you. There are still some organizational issues that are hard to look past. They've really got to prove that over a longer stretch of time. The Nuggets don't have that. And really, we probably should be talking more about the Nuggets as this really good young team. If they hadn't had the success, if they had the type of record the Hawks had, but their young players in particular were showing some of the type of potential. I'm not sure exactly how that would look, because if they were showing that type of potential, the team couldn't help but be really good. But if they were lesser, if they were stuck maybe where the Kings are, we'd be talking about the Nuggets as one of the brightest young teams in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious how they shake out in the playoffs, because they haven't been there, so we haven't seen them. We don't have the... What's the word I'm looking for? We just don't have the background on them, right? We don't have the history with them. But where they'll shake out in the West playoffs compared to Oklahoma City or Houston, who's suddenly playing incredibly well. Like, talent-wise, on paper, I think they're there. I just haven't seen them do it in those situations under that kind of pressure where matchups and things are a little bit different.
That's why I'm keeping a close eye. I know they have gained some breathing room a little bit, but just to make sure they hang on to one of those top two seats, because I think there's a big drop-off in the West after the top six teams.
Yes.
So whoever gets those 7-8 seats probably be the Clippers and Spurs, but even if it's somehow the Kings or the Lakers, or I'll even mention the Timberwolves, who are tied with the Lakers in the standings, if it's any of those teams, I'd much rather face them than somebody in the Portland, Oklahoma City, Houston, Utah group. So for the Nuggets, I do think it's a very big deal to get that top two seed. Whether it's one or two, I don't think makes a huge difference, unless you make it to the conference finals and get to play the Warriors. But otherwise, just to get that one playoff series victory, I think it's huge.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that's going to be one of the fascinating stretches down the stretch in the playoffs, is that middle of the West, because you mentioned it. Houston, Utah, Oklahoma City, and why am I going blank on
Portland?
Portland, thank you. They're all in. They're, look, 538 has them all bunched within a couple games of each other right now, projected. That order is going to matter. Who gets home court? Who's playing well coming in? Who's healthy? Also, who gets 3-6? Who gets on the other side of the bracket? Basically, and because I think if you're any of those top six teams, but you're 2, 3, or 6, and you're on that other side of the Warriors bracket, you actually have a shot of making the conference finals.
If you're in that 3-6 range, what would you rather have? 4 with home court advantage in the first round, or 6 where you can avoid the Warriors longer?
But that's a good question. Ownership is going to push for 4, right? Like, I want the home dates. I want the money. But man, you might not get out of the first round. Well, then again, you got the six, you might not get out of the first round either. So I guess I'd push for four. I mean, you can't, like, if I were close to landing, if it were two games left and it looked like I was going to land the six, I might sit guys to make sure I got the six. But I don't know how much I'm going to target that before that kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, I get the ownership standpoint in the home games, but you also get extra home games by having a whole nother series.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Dan, we mentioned the Clippers in there. That kind of spins into the first question I wanted to get to from Alfredo Rodriguez or @WhammyGiveaway on Twitter. It was a long two-part question, but to sum it up in one sentence, after all they've been through as an organization, the kind of hell they've been through in an organization, does the dark past of the Clippers prevent them ever being praised for finally doing something right, and could it hurt them this summer? I think they're getting a lot of praise right now, at least around NBA circles, for how they've handled the last couple of years, starting back to trading Blake Griffin and getting pieces back and really starting to rebuild their roster.
Yeah, memories are short. If they win, everything from the past goes away, especially after an ownership change.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it hurts them, and I really don't think it hurts them this summer at all, does it? I mean, if you're Kawhi Leonard, let's be specific, or maybe Kevin Durant, but if you're Kawhi's the name that gets linked a lot, if you're thinking about them, I don't think you look at this organization from the outside and think, man, they used to, they were run by a racist 10 years ago. I don't know if I want to go there, because like you said, it's just a radically different organization, and I don't want to say they're perfect. I don't want to say that every last vestige of the problems there has been shaken. But in terms of just, hey, an owner that's willing to spend money and not only build a new arena, upgrade the practice facilities, get them up to date on medical, but all that stuff is there. Like, nobody's looking at them thinking, man, I don't want to play for that owner. Where other major free agent players, that might give you pause.
Yeah, I mean, the only way I can see it lingering is that everybody knows the difference in fan support and attention of being on the Clippers versus being on the Lakers.
Yeah.
And maybe in a different world where the Clippers didn't have the history they did, that gap isn't so large.
Yeah, exactly. That is distinctly possible, but they were always, I mean, by the time they moved to Los Angeles in the early 80s, it was showtime. Like, they moved into the inferior building, the now torn down Los Angeles Sports Arena that is the home of the, it's a beautiful building. It's the home of the LAFC soccer team. But that was a dump of a building in the 80s. And, the building only filled up when the Celtics and Lakers came to town because there was just, there was no interest then. But at this point, I think Ballmer's on the right track trying to get a new building. Although that, by the way, for people who don't know, if you want to watch a fun little side proxy fight, Steve Ballmer's trying to get the building, the new Clipper building, built about a block and a half, two blocks from the LA Forum, which has been turned back into the old Laker home, which has been updated by Madison Square Garden, James Dolan's group, into a hot concert venue. A lot of concerts there now, a lot of big stuff that sells out that building. They don't want the competition, and there's a real proxy fight going on politically in Southern California about getting that new Clipper building built in Inglewood. It's kind of if you like political intrigue stories, it's one worth watching. It's kind of entertaining.
Yeah, that's a nice subtle drama between the Clippers and Knicks.
Exactly. There's more of that coming this summer as they chase free agents. Another really good question, actually, it was a series of comments, but I think they were really topics completely worth covering, came from Mr. Noel, New York City. That's @ChiefNoel96. I assume he went to Florida State on Twitter. I had put out a series of questions in one of our tweets trying to get comments on this, and he gave us three things back. Raptors are coming out of the East. Harden is the MVP, and who cares if the Suns beat the Bucks twice? I'll start with the third one of those. I don't think anybody cares. Does anybody care if the Suns beat the Bucks twice? I mean, the Suns do, I guess.
I care, just for the novelty of it. I think it's just a weird, interesting thing that the worst team in the NBA? I don't know.
The Knicks are pushing for it.
I don't know. Actually, offense to both of them. I don't know. One of the very worst teams in the NBA beat the best team throughout the season in the NBA twice, swept the season series. I just like the novelty of it.
Yeah, but it I don't think it affects the impact of that. And let's bring that around to the second part of that, which he said, Raptors are coming out of the East. I don't know that that's a foregone conclusion in the least right now.
Yeah, I'm picking the Bucks for sure. Whether I'd pick them or the field, I think, is a close call. But
yeah,
they have been the best team throughout the season. And I really like the Raptors' talent. When we did our podcast after the trade deadline, I had some concerns about how Marc Gasol would fit. I still thought the trade was worth it, but I did have some concerns about how he'd fit. I think it's working out very well. I like how they're playing. I like how they're developing together. I just don't have them quite as high as the Bucks, but they would be my second choice in the East.
I like the Bucks, and by the way, great piece today. If you haven't seen it, Sam Amick basically came out and picked the Bucks in the East and says we're sleeping on them. We may be. I think it's just that we haven't seen them answer again. We haven't seen them answer the big questions on the biggest stages before. How does Eric Bledsoe handle? He's struggled with defensive pressure in the playoffs before. He's about to see a ton of it. You know, Chris Middleton can be kind of a streaky shooter. Like, does he suddenly go cold? And also, I think the really interesting question for them is they've succeeded greatly with a defensive strategy where Brook Lopez stays back, doesn't come out, you know, off the pick, protects the paint. It's a great strategy. But if I'm going into a seven-game series and I have Al Horford and I can start to pull him, or somebody else, and I can start to pull him away from the basket, how do the Bucks adapt? I think there's a lot of questions there, but you've got to have them as, to me, I'm with you, I think it's, those two are 1-2, Toronto and Milwaukee. And then, boy, the Celtics have looked good the last couple games. I need to see this over a larger stretch of time, but they're another team with the versatility and depth to be right there.
Yeah, they have all the talent, and the 76ers have a lot.
Yeah.
There are four really good teams in the East, and then there are the Pacers who play hard enough to maybe beat any of them. I obviously wouldn't pick Indiana, especially without Victor Oladipo, against any of the top four, but they've earned enough faith to say I wouldn't be shocked if they beat any of the top four in a series.
No, honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if any of the four of them came out. Maybe a little bit. I just got a feeling that the lack of depth, I mean, as good as that starting five is, and potential five-man lineups are out of Philly, and you can keep two of them on the court at any time. I just think the lack of depth is going to hurt them at some point.
Maybe. To me, depth is something that matters less in the playoffs. You don't have back-to-backs, and you rely more on your top players. To me, it's often the deeper teams that fade in the playoffs, so I could see that actually helping Philly relative to other teams.
Yeah, but do they have the versatility, I guess, defensively? They do have length. I mean, obviously, Ben Simmons is a good defender, and he's long. They've got Jimmy Butler. Joel Embiid knows how to protect the rim. I guess on paper, it's all there. I just need to see it against good teams on a consistent basis, as I'm not sure. And by the way, the other fascinating race to watch down the stretch is can the Pacers hold on to that three seed? Because, man, that changes the dynamic, doesn't it?
Well, putting the 76ers and Celtics into a first-round series sort of seems cruel for those teams, but for the rest of us, that sounds great, because one of them is going to lose in the first round. They have high-stakes free agencies, and to have your free agents going into the summer coming off a first-round loss, ooh, that would be tough.
Yeah, it would be. By the way, to be honest about this, if you look at it, the Pacers have a brutal schedule over the next 10-12 games. They long road trip. I know they've got the Bucks this weekend too. Bucks or Sixers. They've got some tough games coming up. So we'll see if they can hold on to that through a brutal stretch of their schedule. But it's, you know, it would be fascinating to see. And I don't think they're an easy out in the playoffs just because they don't have a lot of weak links. You're going to have to, you know, they don't have the superstar, but they also just, they don't have the guy you can just go at time after time. They do have versatility, and they kind of know who they are. So you have to give them credit for that. By the way, you've been, you know, you're in Detroit. You've seen a lot of the Pistons. They are one of the other really hot teams the last 10 games in the league. Like, is that an aberration, or I don't think they're beating anybody in the first round, but how big a thorn in somebody's side can they be?
Well, I think they could beat the Pacers if they get to that 3-6 matchup, which is where it is right now. Obviously, there's a lot of time for it to change, especially for Indiana to drop, like you said. The Pistons are playing better. I think a lot of it is Reggie Jackson getting fully healthy. I'm not sure he was completely recovered from his injury last year, completely having his strength back in his leg. But I think part of it is, look, the Pistons are a slightly above average team, and slightly above average teams go through some hot streaks during the year. They go through some cold streaks during the year, and it tends to balance out. And I think they're just playing well right now because that's what slightly above average teams sometimes do. But if, to me, if there's anything sustainable in this change, it's that Reggie Jackson is playing better.
Yeah, and they certainly... Stan Van Gundy paid him to be better than he's... I mean, injuries have been part of that, but he just hasn't been that great over the course of his Pistons time, and they need him to be. And Drummond seems to be thriving off that. It seems to have opened stuff up for him. He's put up big numbers a couple of games.
Yeah. I mean, part of this is I think when Reggie Jackson is playing better like this, when he can drive to the basket more effectively, it just naturally makes the offense more qualitarian. It takes the load off Blake Griffin. Yeah. When Jackson wasn't moving as well, so much fell to Blake Griffin, and he just really got in the mode of taking over. And I think that left Drummond sometimes looking for only scraps.
The third comment on there is, I think, one of the most interesting things going around the NBA right now, which is he says James Harden's the MVP. Yeah, that's actually a brutally tough race right now. This feels more like Harden-Westbrook a couple years ago, where, but this time it's a three-man battle with Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Paul George all having really good cases. I don't know how much I've just started to really delve into this, and it's forcing me to think about how I value MVP and what I'm going to prioritize. How much do I prioritize team winning? How much do I prioritize how vital player X is to his team winning? And how much are you going to put defense on this? Because they all bring slightly different skill sets to the table this time around.
I'm always looking for the player who contributes the most to winning over the course of the season. Now, sometimes that might look like the best player on the best team. That might look like the best defensive player. It really varies by season, and it's obviously a difficult thing. But to me, it's an individual award. I'm not looking directly at team success. Now, I look at team success because that's often indicative. If you have had the best season of anybody in the league, your team is probably going to be pretty good. Maybe not. Maybe you just have terrible teammates. I'll still give you the MVP. But I do think it's worth looking at team success just to try and figure out where an individual player is.
That's fair enough. But that gets into, if you're looking at this case, the Bucks have the best record in the NBA, the best offense or second best offense in the NBA. Second, right? In the NBA. And Giannis is the heart of what they do. But he also has a lot of talent around him. They actually have good numbers when he's off. He's got shooters around him. They've got an offense that's set up to play to his skill set, where I think James Harden, offensively, has to be a much bigger part of what they do. He just, especially during that stretch, he just had to carry their offense.
Right, in a lot of ways I don't want to say easy for Giannis, but easier than it is for Harden. Harden has a huge burden every night. Yeah. It's a little less so as they get healthy, but throughout the season has had a giant burden, creating everything offensively for the Rockets, for himself, for his teammates, really putting that on his back. Giannis is not a system player by any means, but the Bucks have a great system around him. Now, I also think you have to give Giannis a lot of credit for the fact that he is good enough for the Bucks to say, we need to build a system around this guy. Giannis is so good, the Bucks have changed their whole franchise. They hired a coach, they signed players, they traded for players, all with the idea of them complimenting Giannis, because Giannis is that guy.
Yeah. And by the way, Paul George has the best on-off numbers of any of the three of them. Like, when he goes off, and part of that is that Russell Westbrook's shooting struggles this year and what have you, when he sits, the Thunder are not good. And then there's the other debate in there. Harden's not a great defender. I don't think he's as bad as sometimes it gets memed out there, but the Thunder have been, even during the 6-game win streak, they've been pedestrian defensively. The offense has been so good that it makes up for it. But Giannis and Paul George are like in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation good, defensively on top of carrying offensive burden. So how much do you factor that in?
You meant the Rockets are.
I meant the Rockets. Did I say? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Defense is very important to me in these individual awards. Not always. Sometimes there are transcendent defenders who do so much on that end. But in general, I find offense more important for these individual awards because at the highest level, I generally think a single player can take greater control of his team's offense. And if he's like somebody like James Harden, he can do everything offensively and then be somewhat hidden defensively. Just on an individual basis, defense just doesn't seem to be usually as significant on these highest levels. Giannis and Paul George are both excellent defenders. They both deserve Defensive Player of the Year consideration. But they are also on good defensive teams with good defensive teammates. And so in the same way, if you want to ding Giannis a little bit for having these strong teammates as you try and suss out his individual value from the Bucks' great record, I think you got to do that defensively too, both for George and Giannis.
Yeah, exactly. And it's...
They probably have more defensive support from the rest of their team than Harden has offensive support from the rest of their, from the rest of his team.
Maybe that started to change though. I think that part of the reason Houston's really on a run now is that those last six games, that's the best I've seen Chris Paul play this season and closer to his, you know, last season form when he was phenomenal. Clint Capella is back. The time off during the break seemed to get him fully healthy. He's running better. They're playing better as a team. I think the depth, again, that's one where the depth and the defense catch up with them. Maybe they get through to the conference finals, but that's as far as they go because of how that roster is constructed. That's a whole different topic. Who can beat the Warriors is a different podcast we can do down the line heading into the playoffs, Dan. Have you thought about, I mean, I kind of thought about it, and I have an order in my head right now for MVP. It's kind of Giannis, Harden, Paul George, but I feel like I can flip-flop that every couple days, and it doesn't feel settled to me at all. Like, I feel I could end up with any order there.
And I haven't done it exactly recently, but the last time I really dug through and came up with my order, it was Harden, Paul George, Giannis.
And I think you can defend any of those options, honestly. Harden, where I struggle with Harden, it comes back and why... I keep occasionally bumping him to the top of my list is just how much he means to the Rockets. As much as Paul George means a lot, and again, numbers-wise, obviously means a lot to Oklahoma City, if James Harden isn't James Harden, if he's not putting up that 30... I mean, when he started that streak, I've written this a few times, they were below 500, and they were the 13 seed in the West. He carried them into the playoffs. Now that everybody's back and playing well, suddenly you're like, hey, maybe they are the second best team in the West. But he had to get them in a position to do that and did it almost single-handedly, and that's got to count for something.
I think that leads to something I think is important for MVP. Like I said, I'm looking for the player who has contributed the most to winning over the full season.
Yeah.
And that obviously does not mean the best player. Sometimes MVP is a product of your environment. If Chris Paul and Clint Capella were 100% and playing well, maybe James Harden wouldn't be MVP. But he was in a position where the Rockets needed him to contribute so much, and he did. He answered that call. He was asked to contribute more than Giannis, more than Paul George have been asked to contribute at any point. Maybe if Russell Westbrook went out and Steven Adams was limited, maybe Paul George could do it and would be the front runner to me for MVP. Maybe if some of those other Bucks got hurt, maybe Giannis could do it, but James Harden did it. I'm not looking to see what a player could do. I'm looking for what they did, and James Harden did it.
Yeah, exactly. I just started toying around with my awards ballot a little bit, and there's some interesting stuff, especially when you get into all NBA out there. I thought... if you'd told me mid-season where things stood, I thought all NBA center was kind of set with Anthony Davis in first. Not so much anymore, and that's a really, I'll tell you, center in all NBA and is fascinating. And then I got into it on Twitter with somebody the other day who's like, here's who your all NBA starting five is, and he had Giannis, Paul George, and Durant all in the starting five. I'm like, can't do it. You know, got to have a center. Which one of those three forwards are you bouncing to the second team? Because, by the way, you can make, again, you can make that case in any order you want, and it's unfair to whoever gets bounced.
Speaking of all-NBA center, that's a good time to hype up my coming up, my article coming up on Carl Anthony Towns.
Oh, yeah, coming out Friday, right? It'll be tomorrow.
Yep, he is in line to earn a lot more money if he makes all-NBA this year.
Do you think he's going to?
Maybe.
He has played brilliantly of late, and the fall of Anthony Davis opens a door that may not have been there, because Embiid has been good, but again, Embiid's missed seven in a row. Jokic is in there. Where do you put Gobert, who's been phenomenal defensively and kind of anchors that that Utah team? Center's not dead. Let's put it that way. And by the way, Nikola Vucevic would have been an all-NBA center most seasons, and he's not even in the conversation.
I think he is. I think he's going to finish surprisingly high. When I started to look through for this Towns piece of what centers I wanted to compare, I realized, you know what, I'm going to put Vucevic in here because he ranks high enough by enough measures. I think he's a feel-good story. People like that he's playing so well for a Magic team that hasn't really gone anywhere. He's a veteran. He's, in my experience, been always good with the media. He is the type of guy who I think is going to surprise where he finishes among voters. And, you know, I don't think he's going to make an all-NBA team, but if he gets a couple votes, that can make the difference between Towns making it and not, and getting all those millions or not.
Yeah, and you know what Vucevic is going to be, though, Dan? He's going to be the guy this July when we're doing radio interviews where they're like, how did somebody give Nikola Vucevic that much money? I'm like, because he's good. Like, he's going to get paid this summer in a role. He's got to be in the right role, but he puts up numbers offensively.
He puts up numbers, no question. I have questions about what type of defense you can build with him as your main center. And so I think there's a good chance that Vucevic is going to get overpaid this summer. But we'll see.
Does Orlando keep him is going to be interesting. If Orlando pays to keep him, even for 2 or 3 years, that might tell you a lot about what they think about Bamba. But that's a...
Or it might just tell you that the optics of letting an all-star go are very difficult, regardless of what the right basketball does.
Especially when he's popular in that market. And Orlando needs something to sell right now.
Man, see, this is the problem with when you let Rob Hennigan build for a long-shot playoff berth to save his job. That roster that he left the next regime is so gummed up with his guys, and there's just no easy way to turn this over to the next era.
No, it's not. But that is a team we're not even talking about. They are technically, if you want something to watch right down the something else to watch down the stretch of the season, Orlando, Miami, and Charlotte are all within a game of each other for the eighth seed. Brooklyn has a rough schedule the rest of the way. Maybe they fall back. Probably not. I think Detroit stays at 6. Brooklyn 7. That 8 seed between Miami, Charlotte, and Orlando is going to be tight. And I think it's going to be Orlando. They've got a soft schedule the rest of the way. And they're playing well. I think it's going to be them.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't think I'm going to disagree.
Yeah. It's. I mean, maybe Kemba gets on a run. Miami... I hate counting out Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra teams because they're gritty, but I just got a feeling. We'll see. Everybody's always excited in the NBA media when they get to travel to Orlando. Did that have the right amount of sarcasm in it when I said that?
I think you're correct, but I disagree. I mean, that's for all you spoiled people in Los Angeles. For the rest of us, it's nice, it's warm. Universal Studios is great.
Yeah, exactly. Nice NBC plug with Universal Studios, by the way. Nice to... Not go with the other big entity in that city and go with the NBC Universal-owned property there.
I'm not sure what other place you're talking about.
I wouldn't know either. Six Flags over Orlando, I'm sure that exists, so we'll go with that. All right, Dan, thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
We will be back. Again, check out Dan's story. He's had a few interesting things this week. Including Carl Anthony Towns on Friday. We'll be back next week with more Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.